chapter 16, verses 19 through 31. We're picking up basically right after Pastor Britta left off. It's another story about the haves and the have-nots, those who have a lot, those who have a little. It's an illustration of Jesus' point that we cannot worship both God and money. So let's turn there right now, Luke 16. There was a rich man who was dressed in purple and fine linen and lived in luxury every day. At his gate was laid a beggar named Lazarus, covered with sores and longing to eat what fell from the rich man's table. Even the dogs came and licked his sores. The time came when the beggar died, and the angels carried him to Abraham's side. The rich man also died and was buried. In Hades, when he was in torment, he looked up and saw Abraham far away with Lazarus by his side. So he called on him, "Father Abraham, have pity on me and send Lazarus to dip the tip of his finger in water and cool my tongue, because I am in agony in this fire." But Abraham replied, "Son, remember that in your lifetime you received your good things, while Lazarus received bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. And besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been set in place, so that those who want to go from here to you cannot, nor can anyone cross over from there to us." He answered, "Then I beg you, Father, send Lazarus to my family, for I have five brothers. Let him warn them so that they will not also come to this place of torment." Abraham replied, "They have Moses and the prophets. Let them listen to them." "No, Father Abraham," he said, "but if someone from the dead goes to them, they will repent." He said to him, "If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." This is God's word. Today is the story of the haves and the have-nots. One guy has, the other guy has not. And it starts off with clothes. Clothes. The rich man has a purple robe. I wore a purple shirt this morning, so I would be especially convicted as I was preaching this sermon this morning. He has a purple robe. Now, purple dye was worth more than its weight in gold in the ancient world. It was the most expensive commodity there was. There was only one known way to get purple in the ancient world, and that was you had to milk sea snails. Sea snails. It was stinky, nasty work. To get a gram and a half of purple dye, you had to milk out this toxic mucus from sea snails. You had to do it from 12,000 sea snails just to get a gram and a half of purple dye. It was terrible, nasty, nasty work. And this is why it was so expensive, because someone had to squeeze a lot of poor snails. Scholars estimate that the value of the rich man's purple robe was $17,000 in today's dollar bills. Now, I'm seeing some people out there wearing purple today. It's all right. But I just want you to think about the value of that husky sweatshirt in the ancient world. But we're going to convict some cougars here too, I hope. Not just huskies. Jesus then tells us to pay attention to the rich man's underwear. This is a serious story, but if you don't pay attention, you are going to miss all the good jokes, okay? He's talking about the rich man's underwear when he's saying that he's wearing this fine Egyptian linen. It would have been pure white, beautiful. It would have contrasted so nicely with his purple robe. What Jesus is asking us to imagine is a guy who is so rich that he dresses like Caesar, okay? That's what he wants us to imagine. White underwear, beautiful purple robe. This guy is dressed to the T's. These days, we say that if someone is born to rich parents, that they are born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They had another expression just like it in the ancient world. They would say it about the sons of emperors. He was born wearing purple. All right? That's what purple is. When that word comes up in the Bible, go, oh, whoa, wealth. What about Lazarus? What's he wearing? Jesus doesn't talk about his robe. Jesus doesn't talk about his underwear. What do we know? Jesus says he was covered in sores. Jesus wants us to imagine a man who's completely naked, except he's covered in sores. In the ancient world, nakedness was a synonym of extreme poverty. He wants us to imagine someone whose only outfit are the sores on his body. This is a guy who's been homeless so long, he's been living on the streets so long, that he's got a terrible skin disease, and no one's helping him. There's nothing that can help this guy. He can't keep himself clean. He's a mess. The second difference between the two guys is food. Now, the rich man threw a dinner party every single day of the week. Last Sunday, I was talking about the parable of the prodigal son. I explained to you that's a terrible name for this parable. It's a parable of two lost sons. But when I told you about that story, I talked about how this compassionate father, when he sees his son come back, he throws a great big party, and he kills the... Okay, same word is used in today's story to describe this guy's everyday meal. Fatted calf. He's celebrating every single day. Fatted calf on Monday, fatted calf on Tuesday. What's for Wednesday? Oh, well, let's have some fatted calf. Every day, this guy is eating veal, okay? Now, this is a time and a place where people did not eat meat every day. They would be really astonished by our great wealth that if you want to eat meat every day, you can. They would have blown their minds. This guy ate meat every single day. When you killed a fatted calf, it was an invitation to the whole neighborhood to come on over. You smell fatted calf? That's an invitation to come to the house. There's food waiting for you. But there's no place at the table for Lazarus, okay? He's not invited in, this naked guy, to the rich man's party. He's on the outside looking in. They had no refrigerators in those days. They had no freezers in those days. If you killed an animal, you had to eat the meat within a couple of days, or it's going to go bad. It's going to be wasted food. And what Jesus is doing is he's painting this picture of a guy who's so rich, he's gorging himself on meat and throwing lots of meat away. He's wasteful. And this is really offensive to the people who are hearing this story. This is a pretty ridiculous story. What waste? But even more dramatic, Lazarus is on the outside looking in. Here's a guy who has been laid there to eat the scraps from the rich man's table. But none of the rich man's servants bother to pack a doggy bag to give to Lazarus. They throw the meat to the dogs. Raise your hand if you have a dog. Raise your hand if you've ever had a dog. Keep your hand raised if you love dogs. I do not want you to assume that these are nice, sweet, friendly, lovable dogs. These are mongrels. These are stray dogs. They are living off the streets. They are there to eat the meat. They are there to fight over the leftover meat. And when it says that the dogs licked Lazarus' wounds, do not presume that these are friendly doggy kisses. The dogs have been fighting over the meat, and now they're turning on to Lazarus as their next meal. Lazarus can't get a meal. He is a meal to the dogs in today's story. That's what we're being told. That's what anyone who would have heard this story in Jesus' day would have known. Dogs were unclean animals. They didn't keep them as pets. Everyone who heard this story knew that that's what we're talking about. The third difference between have and have-nots is housing in today's story. The rich man has such a nice home that he's built a huge gate to keep the riffraff out. We find a Greek word in today's story that we still use today in English. It's pylon. Pylon is not just a great big thing that you stick in the ground. Pylon meant a great big city gate. This is not your garden gate. This is not your backyard fence. We are being told that this guy's got a huge city gate to keep the insiders in and to keep the outsiders out. This gate keeps social problems from knocking on the rich man's door. Walls like this are designed to keep poor people like Lazarus invisible. Which, by the way, is a real problem with the homeless. After a while, they start to believe that they're invisible because no one bothers to look at them or talk to them. Now, someone dumped Lazarus at the rich man's gate to beg for food. The rich man had a feast every day. Presumably a lot of people were coming in and out of the pylon, in and out of the gate. They see this guy, but no one's bringing him any food. No one's helping this guy out. This is willful neglect. Both men die. Lazarus dies because of hunger. Maybe he dies because of the dogs. The rich man, he dies too. Maybe he died of obesity-related diseases. Maybe he just choked on a bone. We don't know. But they both die about the same time. Death comes to everyone, no matter what side of the fence you live on. Lazarus goes to heaven while the rich man ends up in hell. This is a shocking reversal of fortunes, because in those days, people believed that if you're blessed in this world, you're going to be blessed in the next world. And if you're cursed in this world, surely you're going to be cursed in the next world. And Jesus says, no. Don't make those assumptions. Don't assume you know anyone's eternal destiny. Just because someone is doing well now doesn't mean they're going to be cursed. Just because someone is doing poorly now doesn't mean they're going to be blessed either. Just because we think you got someone figured out, we don't necessarily. In this surprising plot twist, we discover that the rich man knew Lazarus's name. The rich man expects Lazarus to abandon the glories of heaven in order to serve him in the torments of hell. When that is strictly forbidden, he asks that Lazarus come back from the dead so that he could bless his five brothers with this good news. Take care of the poor so you don't end up in hell like your brother. Jesus closes out his parable with one more subtle joke. If they don't listen to Moses and the prophets, they will not be convinced even if someone rises from the dead. His point is, look, Jesus rose from the dead. And if we can't listen to Moses, if we can't listen to the prophets, if we can't listen to all the teaching of Jesus that says, take care of the poor and the needy, you're not going to buy it, ever. Jesus doesn't let any of us off the hook. Today's parable does not sanctify all poverty. Today's parable does not vilify all wealth. It's not that simplistic. Jesus is simply illustrating the point that Pastor Britta read a moment ago, which is you cannot worship both God and money. The parable of Lazarus and the rich man confronts a certain kind of wealth that chooses to ignore the suffering and the poor among us. Jesus provokes us to open up our eyes and see the invisible people right in front of us, the people who aren't dressed real well, the people who are hungry, the people who have no warm place to sleep tonight. And Jesus is saying that none of us has an excuse for ignoring the unclothed, the hungry, and the homeless tonight. Now, you may not feel particularly rich, but most Americans are better off than the rich man that Jesus pictures in today's story. Anyone with a dollar bill can go to the Goodwill and get themselves a purple t-shirt, right? Anyone with a dollar bill can go to McDonald's, and you can get a slab of fatted calf after church today. It's a thin slab of fatted calf, but it's still fatted calf. It's the same thing. You can eat meat every day if you've got a dollar. You'll even get some change back. If you have ever visited a dentist, if you've ever seen a movie, if you've ever received antibiotics, have you used a washing machine before? Have you ridden a car in your life? If so, you are more blessed than anyone in Jesus' day could possibly imagine. None of us are let off the hook for today's story. No matter how rich you are, no matter how poor you are, none of us is let off the hook. Hey, you've had fatted calf. I see a lot of purple in the congregation today. Now, Bethany Covenant Church, including on my own self, Bethany Covenant Church is committed to serving the poor. Bethany, it's the Hebrew word that means poorhouse. That means we go to Poorhouse Covenant Church. For some reason, the founders of this church decided to name themselves this daunting name, this intimidating name, this, frankly, it's a little bit scary name. We are Poorhouse Covenant Church. And that's a doozy of a responsibility. It's not just Moses. It's not just prophets. It's not just Jesus who's convicting us to take care of the naked, the hungry, and the homeless. Our very name insists that we live up to the responsibility of caring for the least among these living among us. There are a lot of ways where Bethany Covenant Church lives up to our name. Let's admit there are a lot of ways that we could do better about living into our name. But today I want to highlight three ways, just three ways that we are living up to this. And frankly, three ways that we would like you to get involved so that you can open your eyes, so that you could see that there are hungry and homeless and unclothed people living among us. Three ways. Number one, let's talk about giving clothes to the underdressed. Bethany Covenant Church, again this year, will take the lead for the back-to-school blessing on August 12th. About 1,200 children will line up at Skagit Valley College to get a free backpack and school supply. That's good, but there will also be a clothing drive to get some gently used clothes to give to kids so that they've got a jacket when they go back to school this year. They got a warm sweatshirt when they go back to school this year. And what's more, they're asking that maybe you could buy some socks for kids, like new socks, new underwear to stuff into those backpacks. So when those kids are going back to school, they're doing so. Hey, Jesus talks about underwear. I could talk about underwear. Look, to get these kids wearing something fresh and clean and new when they go back to school this year. Bethany Covenant Church, with our Vacation Bible School program, we're going to take a special interest in the preschoolers because they don't get a backpack yet, but we don't want them to go away empty-handed. We want them to go away with something that blesses them. You could give some money to that, or hey, you know what's even better? Show up and help hand these out and see the face of poverty living among us. Second, let's talk about feeding the hungry. I encourage you to serve a meal at Friendship House. I encourage you to join the garden group that grows vegetables in our backyard that we give to people. Not just the junky stuff, but good treats that are healthy for us. Right? I still like fatted calf. But go do that. I just found out yesterday that the 60,000 meals that we prepared with Skagit Feeds Kids in December, by the way, I'm going to say that again, 60,000 meals are being sent off to the Republic of Malawi in Africa yesterday. I had to look it up. I don't know Malawi. I don't know about you. I had to look it up. It's in Africa, but we're feeding the hungry. This is a whole country of people that were invisible to me until yesterday, until I realized, oh, wait, I'm feeding these people I'm never going to meet. Those are wonderful ways to feed the hungry. But this morning, I want to highlight the Easter boxes that we've got out there. You see the food shelf out there? There's a bunch of sign-up sheets right in front. You can sign up to bring some cereal. The next time you go to the grocery store, you can get some rice or some sugar or some flour or whatever else that they've got up there. Sign up. Do something. I mean, you don't have to do that much. It's putting a couple cans of soup in your shopping cart for someone other than you. We're trying to do it for 50 people to give these Easter boxes away. After the first service, I had a homeless woman come up to me. And she said to me, hey, what about the working poor? This woman was thinking of someone else who has more than she does. But what about the working poor? What about these people? Can we give a box to this friend of mine who has a job but isn't making ends meet? Yeah. What about the working poor? Third, let's talk about helping a family own a home of their own. Bethany Covenant Church was one of the original churches in this community to support Habitat for Humanity. It has been a number of years since we've been involved in a building project, but we are negotiating with Habitat right now to help start a project somewhere in our neighborhood. We've already raised $1,000 for this when we had the first Messiah concert. When Handel wrote the Messiah, by the way, he did it as a fundraiser, which is why when we're doing this Handel's Messiah concert, you know, we are raising money to partner with Habitat to bless them on putting on a roof of this new house or putting windows in this new house or to hang drywall in this house. We may not be able to do the whole thing, but we could do something significant and good with them. You might not feel comfortable swinging a hammer anymore. Maybe you're uncomfortable playing with power tools, okay? Well, go to the concert. There's a minimum suggested donation, but there's not a maximum suggested donation. Write a check. Help build a house. Hey, this is a great program. If you want to help the homeless, these are people who are doing their best. They are working people. They are helping build the house. It's not a freebie, but you can partner to give someone a hand up, okay? And you can have a clean conscience about helping someone get a home of their own. Jesus told the parable of Lazarus and the rich man to persuade people to love God and to love their neighbor more than they love the money in their pockets. It is not a guilt trip. It is not meant to embarrass you. This parable is a call to action so that we will actually do the work of clothing the naked and feeding the hungry and housing the homeless. Bethany Covenant Church is committed to helping you step out of your comfort zones and do this ministry. We are committed to it. Let's work together to open our eyes, see what's not working in our community right now, and taking care of the poorest among us. As Jesus said elsewhere, truly I tell you, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me. Let's take care of Jesus by taking care of the poor.